Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to CMC Radio, everybody. This is Rob May, and with me today is Neil Golden. Neil, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm sort of excited to be here.
Great. It's great to have you back. This is the fifth show now of the five-part series that we're doing with you for this time around. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself? And I know we've spoken in great depth about the stock market and investments and what's safe and what's not. So first, why don't you give us a little feedback and knowledge about the actual art, really, that it is, the stock chart reading.
Okay, first I'd like to start off with a disclaimer. Investing in the stock market, it is an art, it is not a science. What you're doing when you buy a stock is actually you're buying risk, and therefore you should never invest with money you can't afford to lose. And just because something has happened in the past, there's no guarantee that it will happen in the future. So when it comes to me, I guess I labeled myself as a stock chart reader, and that there are other things that trade out there like futures, commodities, and currencies, but I just limit myself to stocks. I use a lot of technical analysis, but today I don't even want to talk about technical analysis. During the week, someone posed the question, are banks a good financial investment to invest in as far as their stocks go? And I thought about it, and I came up to the conclusions that no, they aren't. For several reasons. So, one, if a bank should, go bankrupt, one, the investor sometimes, loses his money, although some accounts are insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. And the other thing, what happens when a bank goes bankrupt is that it causes a lot of unemployment in the sense that people can't go to the bank to get loans to, buy the supplies and everything else that they need in order to stay in business. So it really causes havoc. As you may know, right now it's about the last part of June, June 25th, and in Europe, they're talking about whether the bank in Greece will go bankrupt, or will the bank pay the money that it owes to Europe and the other countries it owes money to, and things like that. So that's mainly the purpose of this little thing I've been thinking about, about banks, So, to take this a little bit further, it's not more or less what banks used to do in the past. Is basically they would make home mortgages, make loans to people buying new houses, or they would help people to buy a new car. But now, the car companies, they all have their own banking programs. If you buy a car from Ford, well, you can use Ford financing.
Right.
And then also Honda has theirs. So the big car companies, they will finance you the purchase of your car. And I think all of them are at this point are charging an interest rate about 1%. So banks aren't really making cars. And a third place you can always find a, or another place you can always get a car loan at a cheap interest rate would probably be a credit union. So it's that. And when, banks now make home loans, they want you to put down at least 20% of the purchase price. as a down payment. Well, this is
right.
a good thing in the sense that you have some equity in the home that you're buying, and the only thing is that the houses are relatively expensive, you know, in the area in California here, you know, anywhere from $500,000 to $1 million is the typical price of a home. And banks are no longer what they are making what they call jumbo loans. I think those are loans from about $750,000 or higher. Well, they don't make those kind of loans anymore. So it makes it really hard. And as I've discussed before, when people buy new houses, it's all the durable goods to go with it, like, you know, new stoves, new refrigerators, you know, carpets, draperies, blinds, washing machines, you name it, you know, new appliances go into the home. So it sort of spurs the economy.
Mm-hmm.
So what it is that banks do, it's how they're making their money that's, I find it's a little bit disturbing. It's, like I said, they're not making money from making loans to individuals, and I find that to be, you know, very unsettling. Back in the 30s, after the crash of 1929 of the stock market, at least Bank of America, I'm a little bit familiar with that,
okay.
They were also selling insurance, but according to the federal laws that were passed in, I guess, the early part of the 1930s, they had to make a spinoff, and that spinoff of Bank of America was Transamerica Corporation, which is basically an insurance company that makes a lot of money insuring property and of that kind of nature, and there's no conflict of interest. You know, today you have banks, what they do is, I guess they get the money currently for practically no interest at all, free from
right.
the Federal Reserve, and they try to loan it to their customers at 20%, so there's not a big market for that.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, as I mentioned once before, is they like to monitor their customers' bank accounts
mm-hmm.
to find out when that bank account is the lowest at its lowest point during the month.
Right.
And they've passed laws in their favor which allow the bank to you know, honor the checks that you've written in any order that they want to. And what they do is they may all of a sudden, you know, cash one of your big checks where you've written maybe 5 or 8 small checks that are smaller, you know, previously, and all of a sudden when the big check, you know, clears, well, you will be, won't have the money to clear the 8 smaller checks, and then they charge you $30 or $35 per bounced check.
Right.
So that's one of their strategies to make more money. So with that being said, as I mentioned before, you know, the alternative to using one of the bigger banks would probably is to open up a credit card, a credit union account.
Credit union, yes.
Yeah, where they don't charge you much for bounced checks. And another investment opportunity, instead of buying bank stocks, I would think would be maybe to, at this point in time, would be to buy something like MasterCard or Visa,
mm-hmm.
Companies that have virtually no overhead. Only thing they do is charge their customers that are using the cards. And that's how they make their money. But as you know, everyone uses credit cards at this point.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, I also feel at this point that the United States, probably sooner and later, we will be a cashless society, is that everybody will either be, you know, have credit cards or debit cards, you know, to take out the money instantaneously from their bank accounts. So that's another
Absolutely.
Thing that we have to get used to is dollars and cents just won't be needed. So,
and, well, how far down the road do you think that is actually foreseeable?
Realistically, I'd say with the way things are going, I wouldn't be surprised if it was here by five, you know, within 5 years.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
as you know, once they figure it out, you know, right now, when you get a new credit card or something, there's some kind of chip in it to prevent anybody from using it illegal. So
right,
you know,
right.
once they get the security technology in place, there's nothing to stop it. I know also people on welfare, you know, instead of using food stamps or anything, they just present their debit card at the grocery store and everything is, you know, taken care of. So,
yep, absolutely.
Yeah. So that's more or less what I see, you know, happening in a real short period of time. It's only us that has to get used to it. I know just a couple of weeks ago I had to order some more bank checks, and talking to the guy on the other end of the phone, he said he had a bank account for 8 years, but he's written less than 100 checks. I said, oh, okay, that's interesting. So, yeah, well, like I said, banks aren't doing, I feel, what they should be doing. But it's just the attitude that they have. You know, of course, all banks like depositors with big bank accounts. But if
right.
you're a small-time customer, you know, and you're working two or three jobs, you know, the banks are there to find out ways and strategies to get more money out of you.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that's what keeps them in business.
yeah, that's true. So,
what are the best ways then to kind of combat this? I mean, where else or what else should people do or can they do?
Really, you know, like I said, other than not using one of the bigger banks, go to a smaller bank or
mm-hmm.
open up an account at a credit union to who I feel will be more inclined to be friendly towards you and their customers, because they know they need their small customers in order to stay in business, and they're not really looking for the corporate clients.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of small banks along those lines. So if you're with a big bank, you know, mainly because you feel it's national from coast to coast, there's a disadvantage. I think I've pointed some of those out.
Sure.
Sure. So now it brings me to maybe the second half of my little talk today.
Absolutely.
Which I wanted to mention about the star system. I thought the star system was dead years ago, but talking to someone about a year ago, they said, nope, it's not. Star system was something that was invented by Hollywood, where in the past, when they first got, you know, talking movies, they had hired certain actors and actresses
right.
to do a picture. And in the meantime, you know, they would hold special events, and the person would go make public appearances, drive a nice car, have nice clothes, and live in a nice house. But now, as you know, Hollywood really doesn't encourage that. Their whole philosophy is use a person for a movie. If it makes a lot of money, that's cool. We can put the money in the bank. And next we'll find another person to use in the next movie. But as far as the star system goes, they don't encourage it because it can be costly. It's the same thing in the record industry. If you're new, young, and talented, you may have a record, but in a sense you sell yourself to the record company.
Right.
And they will give you a nice car, let you do public appearances, and they'll give you a nice house. But as soon as you stop making hit records, well, they take it
all
back.
That all goes away.
Right, and you're left with nothing. So basically, like I bring this up, it's because they have, in the past, you know, I guess a lot of the big movie studios and record companies have made a lot of money, you know, doing this. But now, as you know, like just to name a few, you know, actors like George Clooney, Tom Cruise, and some others, they're now like independent filmmakers, which means that they have the money to make their own films and
Absolutely,
put them on the market. And they avoid the big name studios. Of course, they don't get as much publicity, but the studios still, they, as you know, independent producers make money off of it and continue to prosper. So, and as far as people in the music industry, they don't really need the big recruiting studios anymore, like what is it, RCA or or
Warner
whatever,
Brothers.
Warner Brothers, yeah, or Sony. They can now, you know, make videos and put them on YouTube or whatever, or on the internet, and you know, and gain a following in that manner. But when it comes to corporations, the star system is well still in effect, you know.
Right.
Well, just before I get to this, I just want to make there's another industry where there's a lot of entertainers, and that's the sports, the field of sports, you know. I think, what is it, baseball players, on average, the lowest salary paid to any baseball player, I think, is $1 million a year at this point. And then you have basketball players. You know, some may get $90 million for 5 years. And then you have football players have relatively short seasons, but they do make a lot of money. So,
right.
But getting back to the corporations, first you have like I've mentioned before, you have what they call the corporate structure, which is just the shell of the corporation. And this is, it has all the rights, privileges that any individual has in society. Is treated like a person. But my complaint is, you know, we have corporations out there that have been around for more than 100 years and have, you know, billions of dollars, whereas the individual, you know, average life expectancy could be from 70 to 80 years, but most people don't die rich.
Right.
And managing these structures, we have what they call the management or the corporate boards, and these are the ones that are giving themselves the corporate well, these are where the stars are now in the business world. We have people that get what they call golden parachutes. If they, even if they fail, you know, if they're the president of some big company, chief executive officer, and they don't perform well, well, you know, they'll get a couple of $1 million in severance pay. Stock options every year, you know, if they don't even perform well. So this is where the star system, in my opinion, is firmly entrenched in the multinational, you know, billion-dollar corporations. And what this really hurts is the shareholders and the people that are working for the corporation. These are the ones that aren't reaping off all the profits that they produce because the managers are taking advantage
right,
of everyone else. So there is, you know, time for reform. And just a few years ago, when the banks were in the verge of collapse and they were bailed out by the government, the managers or the ones or the CEOs were still getting bonuses and, you know, extra shares for, you know, just staying in business. Well, the shareholders definitely lost money. So this is where, you know, in my opinion, at the current time, the star system is alive and well.
Well, now, in terms of that then, with the star system now, for a lot of people, I mean, how would you explain the star system itself to somebody that has no idea what you were mentioning?
Well, to me, you know, what these managers are why they're hired is they're hired to save the company money. Mm-hmm. And this I find that they do by maybe cutting our the workers' medical programs or their benefits
right.
that they offer to their employees. And if they can prove that they can do this to the people that work for the same company as they do, they will be rewarded.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, you're working for, and that's why I don't want to name any companies. But
of course.
In a sense that, you know, when you get to retired, you know that, you know, you're going out with much more than you came in with. So, they did some studies recently and found out that the CEOs of some companies, on average, were making 270 times more than the workers.
Right.
Whereas in a small company, you know, everyone just about makes the same, and there's no great exaggeration between benefits between the people who are running it and the people that are working for it. So that's one of the things that you notice.
Sure. So is the primarily the blame just placed on the greed of the CEOs?
Mainly. Well, that's it works to their advantage because they get to sort of make the rules. You know, one thing, as we know, especially among multinational companies, they have a lot of money that they never intend to bring back to the United States, but one way they can bring it back is to use this money that's overseas to buy their stock back in the company. And, of course, they will, any issues come up, they will know how to use it to vote for what they want. So
right.
They sort of reward themselves in that sense, you know, and the shareholders are left out in the cold and may never get the proper dividends or returns on their investment that they should.
So who needs to take action? Who are the people that need to, well, really, what can and what should and who ultimately needs to step up here?
Well, it's a long thing, but actually, you know, shareholders should take their company back from the managers. But, you know, as I was saying before, it's not only the managers, you know, who own the majority of the stock. So the little investor, like I said, there's very little he can do, you know, but he should be aware of this before he invests his money in the companies that operate like this. You know, I guess you've heard also a lot of multinational corporations are changing their home offices or picking foreign countries to move their headquarters to for tax purposes. So instead of that, you know, they're now European corporation with offices in the United States. You know, when they actually started here, they're, you know, moving to other countries. But it's mainly just a tax, you know, break that they're looking for. So,
of course,
I don't think our tax rate is excessively high at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But I know, you know, a lot of people out there feel that they really shouldn't be paying more taxes.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And that's a constant battle, I think, and people are always going to, you know, they're always going to feel like they're overtaxed. And, you know, I mean, for me, living in New York, in the New York area, of course, you know, it's something that we always combat.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, one thing I do know that, you know, when the country was first founded, didn't want to bring this up because it has too many political implications, but people in the southern part of the United States would every summer go to England and spend all their money there, and they wouldn't circulate it in their community, which means that they weren't interested in roads or public schools or public education.
Right.
So, whereas the people in the north were very industrialist, they had free libraries and public schools. So, for whatever reasons, there was a clash between these two groups, and it was very costly. You know, the idea of, you know, either you were born a king or you had your right to change your status and pull yourself up by your bootstraps. It's, you know, one of the classical debates that's been going on for many years, and it's, you know, still going on today.
Absolutely. And for all those just joining us, we are winding down with our fifth episode with Neil Golden. He has been talking to us over the last five episodes about the stock market and investments and his ways of actually reading and predicting which ways certain stocks are going. Neil, we're narrowing down to our final 3 minutes for this particular series here. You know, I'd love to find out, what are some of your fears and maybe hopes even for the future?
I have never seen anything so messed up in my whole life, but I find this to be a very exciting time to be alive because of all the ideas that are being generated right and left. So it's very exciting in a sense. You've heard the term, it's the best of times, it's the worst of times. And it's something to wake up to, you know, every morning. So where are we going? I really don't know, but it's a good time to observe.
And as far as that goes, with you know, since you brought up observing, have things been steady in the stock market? Is now a good time for people to get involved?
No, I think I mentioned once before, the summer of 2015 is not a good time to go on. I didn't mention it, but there's too many things, you know, internationally. The Cold War could be reinvented. If that happens, you know, there won't be any market for the goods in the United States. And then they have the, what they're calling the TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership is being developed. You know, we may lose some jobs in the United States over that. So, you know, this next political election for president, it could be very, very interesting to see what happens and see what unfolds. Along with, you know, the environmental concerns and other things that are, you know, cropping up. So
sure.
If things, absolutely, you know, people are forming all kinds of alliances, which will be interesting to watch.
Well, yeah. And it's interesting, too, that you brought up, and while we have about a minute left, I just wanted to ask you quickly, how does the presidential election affect the stocks and the market in our whole?
They say in some ways it's an indication of what may go up in some years if a Republican or a Democrat gets elected. It does have a definite correlation as to who wins, but what it is, I don't exactly know.
Right.
But it's a good sign in the past, but and that's why, you know, you know, I'd have to be a fortune teller or whatever, which I'm not, to tell you who's going to win. So it's no sure thing, you know. So we'll have to see. Maybe we'll get, you know, someone completely new, or maybe we'll get, you know, American royalty. Who knows?
Well, Neil, I do want to say thank you for coming on the show. It's been great discussing everything with you over the course of the last five episodes. Hope everything goes well for you. Good luck to you. And from everybody here at CMC Radio, this is Rob May saying we'll see you soon.
Okay. Well, it's definitely been a pleasure for me. It gives me a time to reflect. And I really enjoyed doing this.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it, Neil.
Okay. Have a good day. Bye.